I've only rarely sung this song in the many years since it was written, because I never thought it would be relevant again. But in the light of one man's bloody and woefully misguided decision to invade a peaceful, unthreatening neighbor, the song is once again a plea for our common humanity. For the brave Ukrainians fighting against this brutal tyranny, and also the many Russians who are protesting this outrage despite the threat of arrest and imprisonment. We all of us love our children. Stop the war.
In Europe and America, there's a growing feeling of hysteria, conditioned to respond to all the threats and the rhetorical speeches of the Soviet. Mr. Khrushchev said we will bury you.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Anne Lamin Show with Michael.
Hello.
Michael and I were incredibly, I don't even know what word to use, blessed, I guess, to have a conversation with Bogdan Bokovetsky, the general manager of Krena FM. As many of you know, I have been raising money for them. And to all of you who have made donations, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Although the official fundraiser has ended, we are still taking donations on their behalf. So get in touch with us if you're interested in participating. Bogdan, as you will hear him tell you, is just a regular guy in extraordinary circumstances. And you will have an opportunity to hear about what it's really like on a day-to-day basis to be a citizen of Ukraine right now and to be dealing with literally in the middle of the night being awakened by your country having been attacked. So here is my conversation with Bogdan Bokovetsky. Well, thank you for taking this time to speak to us.
It's absolutely my pleasure. And I insist on this. It's absolutely my pleasure because you're doing so much for us. And you are supporting us and you are putting your time and your personal effort into this. It's absolutely my pleasure to be in cooperative mode with you on any agenda. Literally on any agenda. Whatever I can do for you, I will do it anyway.
Thank you.
I just want you to know this. Thank you.
That means so much to me. I can't even begin to describe. I'm going to start with asking you a few basic questions.
Of course.
Like, how did you first get into radio?
It was a very, very dull New Year party. And it was like 1995 or something like that. It was so dull that we had to listen to the radio station. And they used to have a quiz, a music quiz. And I was fond of music. And we won all of them, the quiz. I mean, all the prizes they had, all the trophies, everything. And next day or in 2 days, we went to the local radio station in Lugansk, actually. We went there to collect our prizes. And the general manager was expecting us already and told me that, no, you are not leaving. you are staying. You start working. You are not leaving.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's the way. No. That's true. And he said, we are looking for music director right now. and you obviously fond of music, so let's work together. I said, okay, let's work together, and that's how it started.
Now, was that on Crana FM?
No. It was a small regional station in Luhansk region, which is now occupied by Russians for 8 years. In small station, just real small.
And how did you transfer, how did you end up with Crana FM?
Listen, I didn't do anything else in my life. And from station to station, gradually from small station to a bigger station, it's pretty standard, like a career ladder or whatever the English term is. You just go step by step, step by step. And then I moved to Kyiv, and in Kyiv I was working for a couple of other stations. So that's it. Just career growth, and that's basically it.
And what was the programming like, you know, when you first started there?
You mean Crana FM?
Yes.
Crana FM. I was talking about career, but Crana FM was very, very different because we started this in 2015, and that was the first 100% Ukrainian language national station in the country. The first one. There was no obligation for broadcasters. You were not obliged to play only Ukrainian music. That was our choice. That was our decision that we will try to do it. And we were the first station. Of course, it's special because I am Ukrainian. Like, unlike many people who have Ukrainian blood and Russian blood or any other blood, you know, in a gene pool. I am Ukrainian from both sides. My father was Ukrainian. My mother was Ukrainian up to 7 generations back.
Wow.
And for me, yes. And for me, it was sort of something very, very personal to do this station, which is only Ukrainian. And yes, it was special. And it was like first station in Ukrainian language and Ukrainian DJs and Ukrainian news breaks. And you don't hear anything else except Ukrainian language. It was a relief for a lot of people, I guess.
What else would you be hearing on other stations?
Like anywhere. I assume you are aware of these formats, like AC, Adult Contemporary Station, or Contemporary Hit Radio stations. Like any normal station, you would listen to rock station, you would listen to pop station, you would listen to talk station. But there was no station broadcasting in Ukrainian language only and Ukrainian language songs only.
And what were the other languages? Was it Russian? Was it English?
Yeah, of course, English, because the music which is popular in United States, I mean, adult contemporary, like Michael Jackson, Britney Spears, is very, very well known in Ukraine as well. And it's played hugely. It's on rotation. People listen to it. And mostly, also, if you listen to Ukrainian radio, you will hear English, Ukrainian, Russian, some French. That's the basic languages.
Right. So you were going along, living life in Kyiv, correct?
Right. Kyiv, yes.
And the general manager of Crana FM.
Right.
And 2 months ago, what was your life like? What was your daily life like 2 months ago?
Listen, very, very nice. I was living in the capital, it's Kyiv, and my daughter, she's a student, and she studies chemistry, and I have a son who is 9 years old, and I have a wife, and it was just a normal life. I go to the office in the morning, I go back in the afternoon, take vacation on Saturday and Sunday. Like normal life, like any person would have. Absolutely normal life.
And what happened then? On the 24th, correct? Russia invaded Ukraine?
24th. yes, everyone would remember this date forever.
Mm-hmm.
24th February 2022. I woke up, maybe I told it before, we spoke over the phone about this, and if I am going to be repeating myself, just stop me and say that it's already been told, okay?
Not at all. This is okay. All new for our listeners.
Okay. So it's going to be a long speech, like several minutes. Are you okay with that?
Please, the more the better.
Okay. So I woke up at 2:30, from a horrible nightmare, just horrible nightmare. Family members involved and just horrible, absolutely horrible nightmare. And I couldn't go back to sleep. And if you cannot go back to sleep, what you do? Right, you browse, you just go open up your laptop and you browse, you read news, you read something else. And I couldn't go back to sleep like till 5, exactly 5. And at 5, I thought that the sleep is coming back over me. And I am literally closing the laptop while I'll see the red news alert that Putin is addressing the nation. And at the same time, I hear bombing starts in Kyiv, bombing in China. At the same time, I see this red alert that Putin is addressing the nation and bombing starts in Kyiv. And of course, I open up the laptop and I click on that link and I see this bastard saying such a bullshit. It's just unbelievable about Nazis in Ukraine, about country. I mean, he's just a sick person, like very, very mentally sick person who needs help and who needs to be kept in asylum somewhere. And he's saying all this bullshit and bombing starts, heavy bombing, and family wakes up. And we just throw into bags which we found at home, we just throw in what we see. Literally, I had like 3 winter coats with me and 1 sweatpants I was wearing for 26 days.
Wow.
Because there is nothing else. You just throw in the things and you have a kid who is crying and he's 9 years old and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. And it's dark outside, it's cold, and he's asking, what's happening? Papa, what's happening? What's happening? Are we going to die? Are we going to die? What's happening? What's happening? We live on the 9th floor. That's like 16 stories building, and we live on the 9th floor. And I understand that we cannot use the elevator, so we had to bring down the things by feet downstairs. We go downstairs and we put the things, these our bags, into our car, and then go upstairs, get some more bags, throw in whatever we see, come back downstairs and come up again and come back with the kid, with the son, with everything. And then we set into our car. We have 2 cars. I have a car and my wife has a car as well. So we packed them with everything we could. And we were in a hurry because a lot of people around us were waking up. I mean, you see that the neighbors are waking up and everybody is trying to escape. Everyone is trying to move. So we see that the traffic builds up. So we cannot just go many times upstairs and bring down everything we can because we understand that we'll be captured inside the city.
Right.
Right, and we stop at some point. We just say, okay, stop, that's the final goal. We go downstairs and we move, because otherwise I don't know what's going to happen next. If we miss something, then we miss something, let's accept it. And we move to our summer house, which is like in 25 or about 30 kilometers. It's about 25 miles from the apartment where we live.
Mm-hmm.
We live to our summer house, and the basic idea was that we'll go there and then we'll see what happens, because it's unthinkable what is happening. It should be stopped like immediately. It's a mistake. They cannot bomb Kyiv. For Christ's sake, they just cannot. The last time Kyiv was bombed was about 80 years ago during World War II. Right. No, not now. You cannot bomb European city. 5 million people living there. Think about it. 5 million people city in Europe. You cannot bomb it just for some made up reasons, like nationalism, whatsoever. He's just a crazy person, this Putin of theirs. Absolutely crazy. He's just mental and he's absurd. What he's saying, it's absurd. And you cannot start bombing city just thinking about Ukraine as a national state only in your head. Right. There is no facts to this. We know that we live different life. It's normal life. Anyway, we go to summer house and we think that it should be over like in an hour because we cannot comprehend what's going on. Do I make myself clear? No?
Yes, absolutely.
We just cannot comprehend how is it at all possible. I mean, we could have comprehend if, for example, it's a bad example, but still, Chernobyl plant would explode. Yeah, it might have happened. Or a hurricane or a tsunami wave would come over. It was understandable, but not bombing from Russia at 5 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. That was not comprehensible at all. At all. So we decided to move for 20 miles away and come back to our senses there, not under bombing. So we moved there and it's near Gostomel Airport. If you don't know what it is, just Google Gostomel, Bucha. That's where our summer house is, Bucha and Gostomel.
Oh, that's a lot in the news just recently.
Yes.
Horrible.
Yes. What you see in the news, that's actually the place where my summer house is for the last 12 years. We've bought this house. We built this house 12 years ago. So these are my places. And everything you see in the news, it's not true because it's worse there. It's worse. I call my neighbors, I call my friends. It's worse. Hundreds of people are missing. They will be found in this mass grave, but later. It's much worse from what you see even now in the news. But anyway, we go there and we went there seeking for some type of shelter, you know, just for a break. Okay, let's go there, sit there and comprehend what's going on. And as soon as we got there, the hell broke loose because they started storming Gostomel Airport. And Gostomel runway is literally 800 meters from, maybe 900 meters from my porch. And I saw everything, the helicopters attacking the Gostomel Airport. I saw just literally from my porch. And they were coming in waves, many helicopters, many times. And they were coming in waves, and we figure out the pattern. They attack airport like for half an hour. Then they go back to their base, get their ammunition, reload it, and come back in half an hour. So we figure out the pattern. Half an hour they're here, half an hour they're absent. And in one of these half an hour when they were out reloading, we got into the car and just moved anywhere further to Western Ukraine. That's my day, 24th of February.
It's incredible. Did you have a place in mind to go to? Did you have friends to go to, or
no.
You just driving?
No one. I mean, maybe a small percentage of people had friends or relatives or plans. But when they say we had a plan in this conversation and say, oh yeah, then why you were leaving on 24th? Because if you had a plan, you would have left earlier. And you wouldn't be living with everybody. So I doubt that a lot of people had real plans. And the basic idea for everyone was just not where to go, but to go from where. Do I make myself clear?
Yes.
No? Yes. So the basic idea was we should leave this place immediately and we'll see what happens next. Let's move like for 100 miles, okay? Which seemed pretty safe, 100 miles. Let's move there and we'll see. Okay, if there is no hotel, we understand this, there is no place to stay, we'll sleep in the car, okay? Okay, but it's doable. You can sleep in the car. I did it many times in my life. It's not so, it's bad, But I mean, it's nothing compared to being under shelling and bombing.
Right.
So, and you move first 100 kilometers and you understand that nothing is going to stop. And then you move further, further, further. And then night comes over and we were just looking for a place to stay in every city we were passing through. And we found just one room in one of these small cities, like about 300 kilometers from Kiev. And it was close to 11 p.m., I guess. It was very, very dark. And you know, listen, fun fact, if I understand that's not fun fact, but one funny thing happened, actually. Funny, as it may be funny under those circumstances.
Right.
Huge, really huge lines on gas stations. Because, like, you could have spent 2 hours on a gas station, and it was good if you were under 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some petrol. Even decided, let's go. So, and we go. After hour, we go, and the lines are terrific everywhere. And then, all of a sudden, in a place where we have found this small hotel and a tiny room in that hotel, not far from that place. I know that we're about 20 kilometers away from my navigation system. I see we're 20 kilometers away from this. We come over and there is a gas station straight in the field, but maybe it's not a field. It's dark outside. It looks like it's in the field. And there are only two cars there. I understand that there is no gas. There is no petrol there. But just in case, just for checking, I drive in and I ask the person who is responsible for this station, and I'm saying, you have any gas? Or you probably don't have any gas. And he says, like, yeah, we do. We have. Come on. It's unleaded 95, like regular gas. Wow. And I'm trying to fill up the tank, and I'm having a small talk with this guy. I'm saying, you see, you won't imagine, like 10 kilometers back, the line would be for 2 for 3 hours. He said, oh, that's okay, because we used to have the same here. They just bombed us 20 minutes ago. That's why everybody left.
Oh, I hate to laugh, but it's
incredible. I mean, yes, we were traveling for 15 hours to escape bombing. We found a place, and like 20 kilometers from the place we were going to stay for a night, they bombed it.
War humor. I guess you have to find it where you can. Oh.
Yes, and you know what? We were laughing with my wife, and I sit back in the car and said, you won't believe me. And that was the first laugh we had in a day. Because it's unbelievable. You travel all day. You are trying to escape. You come over here. You seem to be in luck because there is no line. And you're refueling your car. Everything seems to be fine. But that's fine only because it was bombed 20 minutes ago.
That's incredible.
That's crazy thing, right?
So yeah. What did you do next?
We stayed at that place. First of all, you are losing count of days and hours and everything. It's very unusual because I'm a manager and I'm pretty well aware of time and everything. I'm sensitive to these things. But all of a sudden, you just don't think about it anymore. You just stay for 3 days or for 4 days. You just stay till it's possible to stay because you read the news and it's more than you can process.
Process.
Right word?
Yes.
Yeah. You just cannot comprehend it, and your capacity, mental capacities, are not enough for comprehending it. And you just click and go in just pause mode. You cannot comprehend what's going on.
That
was it. And we stayed there for 3 or 4 days. And then we decided, let's move somewhere, because it was a real small city. And you couldn't work from there, or you could not get united with your colleagues in there because there is no room. It's a small, tiny hotel, which is usually empty. It was open just because the war started.
Now,
and we decided to move.
Mm-hmm. What happened with the station at that point? Was there just dead air or?
No, it was not dead air. It was on air because we have automatic system to broadcast. And there was signal always, and there were some songs. There was no regular programming, of course.
Right.
But it was never dead. No.
Any news or anything? Or no. Just the music was playing? Because,
no. Music, maybe not news, maybe some like small features. But no, I don't think that in these 3 or 4 days we did anything except music. And maybe just announcement like be safe, something very, very basic.
Right.
So, because Kyiv was under attack, and to ask people to go to the office is an insane idea.
Right. Now, you have tremendous support in the USA and from freedom-loving countries all over the planet, which I know you know, but you're talking particularly in this country to a group of people that have never been in a land war on home territory. And maybe you, I know that you were back in the capital. Could you describe a little bit what that's like, what it was like back there?
Yes, I was back there like in, we left and I was back like in 25 or 24 days after the war started. It's like between 3 and 4 weeks after the war started. And that's completely different city. You realize the buildings, but the streets are empty. Or you streets literally empty, and 5 million people. Which city is similar in the United States? 5 million people.
Oh, so many cities of 5 million. Yeah, but I mean Boston. City, right? Let's say Boston, right. My closest city.
Okay, Boston. Imagine Boston, which is empty. Empty, like in a movie.
Impossible.
Like in a movie before Godzilla comes. Empty, this empty.
Yeah.
There are some checkpoints on main streets, curfews, and usually eight or nine, I was counting actually when I was there, usually 8 or 9 air raid alerts. And the shortest alert is about half an hour, and the longest was 2 hours 50, I guess, about around 3 hours. And it happens daily. In 24 hours, you cannot perform any duties.
And when that mm-hmm. happens, what do you have to do?
There are shelters, I mean, makeshift shelters, like a parking lot, which is 2 floors down underneath the shopping mall.
Right.
And you're advised to go there, or a basement, or anywhere. You just run for a shelter, run for cover, or all metro. You don't have metro. What do you call this?
Under subway.
Underterrain train.
Yeah, the subway. The underground, yeah.
Underground, yes. Underground. Underground subway, yeah. Or you go to any subway station. They were all open as shelters as well. But we came in the first day, and we heard this very, very loud siren, and we went to a shelter which was huge parking, 2 stories parking underneath of a big residential building, and there were only 4 of us.
Is that because the city was empty, or because
two reasons, first the city looked empty. It looked empty. And the second reason, people are just getting so tired. They do not go out anywhere. Because we were trying to follow these air raid alerts like for the first day. And you cannot do anything next morning because you have no sleep. You cannot sleep. You cannot eat. Just do the math. If you have 8 or 9 air raid alerts a day. I mean, every 24 hours. I don't know what is the English term for this. We have special one in Ukrainian language, but the English 24 hour is a separate special term, like a day. Okay?
Right.
It means every 3 hours you have a raid alert. And it might be like half an hour, or it may be all 3 hours. Or they might have like 3 or 5 in a row with just 15 minutes breaks. You have air raid alert. Then they cancel it in 30 minutes. In 15 minutes, you have another air raid alert. And they cancel it in an hour and a half. Then in 20 minutes, you have another. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it happens 8 or 9 times a day.
So at some point you say, I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to go to sleep or stay asleep or keep doing what I'm doing.
Yes, yes. But if you hear especially, that was our actually modus operandi. That's what we decided to do. And but several times when the explosions were extremely high and very, very audible, then we were running for this shelter a couple more times. And when it was sort of regular but audible, we went just to the lobby. Like
so you were able to get there. Back into your building in your apartment at that point?
I'm sorry, I've lost the first part of your question. Could you say it again, please?
Oh, you were able to get back into your apartment at that point?
Yes, we have keys.
Right. And is that building still standing, as far as you know?
Yes, yes. Kyiv is not so much devastated as Mariupol or many other cities. And the building is standing, yes.
I see. So at some point you decided, all right, we've got to leave. What was that point? What was the turning point then?
You mean from that small village?
No, from Kyiv. I mean, how long were you back there? Or you were just back there yourself, right?
No. I have a friend who has friends who come over here in Ukraine to film some documentary about what's going on. And I was sort of local producer for them. I took them to Kyiv and spent with them 7, 8, or 9 days. 7 to 9 days, I cannot tell you for sure. And then we came back and they went abroad and I went back to the station.
I see.
In the mountains. I was sort of on a job. That's why I'm telling you, you cannot do anything.
Right.
Literally anything, especially if you are there for filming.
So, yeah, there's nothing.
Well, you are just exhausted.
Yeah.
You are just plain exhausted. And that's it. You are sleepy and exhausted. And what creative decision can you make or what stamina can you use? Nothing.
I can't imagine. So... Yeah. What was happening with the station at that point? Still broadcasting,
it's broadcasting.
On automatic?
Of course, it's broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now at some point, you were still using the towers in the city, or what was happening there with your
in
broadcasting?
I assume on, if I recall correctly, it should be day 7 or day 8 when they hit these huge missiles, the broadcasting tower in Kyiv, and killed 5 bypassers, just a family with 3 kids. Unbelievable. And we were off air like for a week in Kyiv. In Kyiv, but we were broadcasting on other territories. Then they hit Kharkiv, also a big city.
Right.
And we were out like for 5 days in Kharkiv. But by that moment, Kyiv was already operational. We were broadcasting in Kyiv and all around Ukraine. And right now they control 4 cities in southern part of Ukraine where we do not broadcast. But we broadcast on 22 cities right now.
So how are you doing that now? How did it come to be? And there was a big pivot you made about what you were broadcasting.
Yes, there used to be a music station, like a normal station, which people tune in to have a company in your car, to have sort of a friend and to have a song to sing along with.
Right.
You know, like any normal people would do, like any normal person. And after war started, we changed our positioning and slogan from 100% Ukrainian to Radio of National Resistance. And we almost immediately when we got together with a couple of guys from the station in these Carpathian Mountains, almost immediately we started broadcasting requests from military, advices from psychologists, a lot of things which were practical at that moment. You know, we were not playing just music and that's it. No, we have an announcement almost after every song right now, or after two songs at most.
You
listen to one song, then you have an announcement. Announcement, I would tell you what type of announcement. We invite our military listeners to call in and to say what they need right now. And they might need binoculars. Binoculars, is that a correct word?
Yes,
what
yes.
You see, okay. And they might need printers to print out some documents or papers.
Mm-hmm.
They might need socks. They might need computers or laptop. They might need some medicine. And people who listen to the station, and if this person, the audience, the member of the audience, if he has a laptop at home, he just brings him to the to the military guys.
And
he knows where to go. Mm-hmm.
They know where to go to the military.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We say phone number. At the end of every request for help, we do it deliberately. We announce a phone number. We announce it very slowly, and we do it twice, like dial +1 00 34 And in case a person, I mean, a member of the audience cannot recall the number, they just contact us through the web page or through social media and say, listen, I have this printer. Where should I bring him? Where should I bring it? Whom should I bring it to? And we just text him the phone number of the person who was asking for a printer.
So you're sort of the national clearinghouse. You're the national information, or one of them anyway.
One of them. That's the correct word. One of them, because everyone is helping everyone right now.
Mm-hmm.
We are not the only one. We are just one of them, because the volunteers are playing such a huge role in Ukrainian resistance right now. They're supporting army with everything, literally with everything. And people are helping. We are just trying to connect the dots, or to be more helpful, to amplify the message. That's what we do. If you need a printer, we can amplify it. And not one person will hear about this, but like 10,000 people would hear. And by this, we increase the chance of getting this printer. You understand, right?
Yes, I do.
Right. Yes, yes, yes. And it works this way. Mm-hmm.
That's something every country in the world should do. One of the things I love about radio, and the reason I contacted you initially, was because I read about you in The New Yorker and your radio people. So I felt an instant connection. What would you say about the power of radio, or the community of radio people?
That's two questions, I guess. No?
Yeah, as many as you want.
Oh, okay. So the power of radio, I can tell you, it works. And the tougher the conditions, the more important the radio is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone is, you know, is a smart ass when you have a new iPhone and 5G connection and the iCloud access. Everyone is smart.
Uh-huh.
But if Russian missiles hits the station and you have no internet, you have nothing, you can use your iPhone as a brick only. And the only means of communication would be old-fashioned good AM
That's receiver, right.
Or FM receiver, which is for free. You don't have to pay for it. You just tune in and you listen to it. And the information you listen to it will save your life. That's the importance of radio. Or it will save somebody's life. That's what's at stake. Not just some entertainment, not just some post, or not just somebody's vacation in Indonesia or whoever spends time where on yacht or on a private plane. No, that's not just a new song or a new sneakers. No, that's the cost of your life or your relatives or your country life. That's what radio does. It might literally save your life. Or you might save somebody's life. That's critical.
That's incredible. And so true.
Yeah, that's true.
It is.
People just don't think about it. But you start thinking about it the first time you get under bombing, believe me. Because you understand that internet will die first.
Right.
And the only means of communication, TV will be dead. You understand this as well. Plus, you cannot carry around TV with you to your shelter or to your basement.
Right.
It's very inconvenient to bring your 55 inches plasma to your basement.
Very, very
fast, you figure out that the only thing that will keep you informed is radio, is this small, old-fashioned thing called radio. That's it.
So true.
And you start loving it more than iPhone 26 or whatsoever. Or how you love this little thing, huh?
Could not agree with you more.
Yeah.
Michael and I and our listeners have been working as hard as we can, and I know it's no big deal, believe me. But we've been trying to do what we can to raise money and to help you out. Could you tell us what you are hoping to do with these funds or what you're able to do with them?
Of course. First of all, I want to thank you for what you're doing for us, because that is very, very important to know and to feel this support, and to know that we are not alone in this war, and to know that people from far, far abroad, I mean, we are not neighbors with you, and you are supporting and you are helping and you are putting an effort. You have no idea how important it's to us. Please believe me.
Thank you.
That we are not alone. Yes. Thank you so much for what you are doing. There is no small or big help here. All help is huge.
Thank you.
All help is huge. Thank you so much for this. And our initial idea was to collect some more or less decent chunk of money and to buy military pickup truck. Why pickup truck? Because from what we see, it's at some front lines, in some parts of front lines, it's so-called Toyota war. So people buy Toyota truck, mount a gun on top of Toyota truck, and they can move very fast around forest and to be very, very hard for enemy to get them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because you have this Toyota truck. And that's very popular, and we wanted to buy a Toyota truck. And that's our aim as well. We are collecting money to buy this Toyota truck for used truck, not a new one, of course. A used pickup truck, right. And from what we hear right now, while we're collecting money, what military is really looking for are radio stations. Military-grade radio stations like Motorola 4400 or Motorola 4800 or something of that kind. There are many manufacturers of them. Because a lot of people have been drafted and the supplies are not there yet. And they're just looking for means of communication. And what can be better for a radio station to raise money for radio stations, right?
Exactly. Can you give an idea in case someone with their Platinum American Express card is listening, how much money... you need for the truck?
Our realistic goal was to get $10,000.
Okay.
Our best case scenario that was that we would get like around 15. We would get around 15, and then we'll start spending them. That was our idea. We are not spending until we get 10 or 15, because no, otherwise you are not able to buy anything meaningful. You would buy something small.
And tell me about the military radio. What does each one of those cost?
I can tell you only in Ukraine. I don't know how much it costs in the USA, okay, because in Ukraine it's somewhere from $500 to $800. That's the range.
$500 to $800. Now let me
a piece.
Let me ask you another question, which may be crazy. I don't know, but are you able to receive packages? Is there any way to send you things?
Of course. And it's very simple. You send packages to Europe, and from Europe, people bring it to Ukraine just in 2 hours. Of course.
Oh, my gosh. You must tell me, give me the information when we're not on the air. Give me the information on that.
Okay. Sure. Sure. Like, a lot of people are volunteering. You will send it somewhere, I don't know, to Poland or to Slovakia or to Hungary, to any country. We'll find a place. A lot of people are everywhere, and they just collect. That's a working scheme. That's what people are using right now. If someone needs special medicine, you just go to, I don't know, to your Slovak friends, and your friend from USA sends to Slovak friends the medicine, and Slovak friends just brings over the border. So it's fully operational. Yes, of course.
Oh, that's so exciting. I know so many people that will want to take advantage of that and to be able to do that. I tell you, you know, one of the things that's so frustrating for us here, especially because we aren't neighbors, because we are an ocean plus a continent away, is mm-hmm. we want to be able to do things and small right. things, you know, even like give insulin or aspirin or antibiotics or socks or whatever it is. And it's
right.
It's really exciting to know that there's a way to do that. So
of course.
I'm really happy to hear that.
Yes. And listen, you just said one thing I want to point out in particular about medicine, what is really needed at any moment, blood-stopping medicine and blood-stopping devices, anticoagulants.
Oh.
That's in such a huge demand because these fuckers, they bomb everything. They bomb just children, women, peaceful people. And it's in huge demand right now. Everything what stops blood, you know?
Well, that's something that I can help you with right away. So I'm really glad you told me that.
Yes, yes. And about radio stations, of course, I understand that a lot of people trying to raise funds, trying to raise money for different causes. And every cause is good. But the money is a valuable possession in our lives, okay? You still have the bills to pay and everything. But maybe someone has a couple of radio stations he is not using anymore. I mean, and why not send them in and send them to work, to the battlefield where they belong?
Well,
do I make myself clear?
100%?
I mean, they're just laying in somebody's garage on a shelf. Why?
I'm going to put the word out. You have my word on that right away.
Thank you so much.
Let me ask you something. If there was one thing besides anticoagulants that could make, and not necessarily something we can give you, I mean, obviously peace and an end to the war, but mm-hmm. given mm-hmm. what the circumstances are, if there was one thing that would really improve life, what would that be?
Oh, it's very easy. Kill Putin.
Wow.
Okay. Listen, it's on top of everybody's mind.
I'll put that on top of my list. Tell me.
It's easy. Ask anyone Ukrainian. You will have 40 million as the number of population of the same answer. Kill this motherfucker. Wow. That's it.
Okay.
And everyone breathes easier after that, you see? Fresh air, no more war, everything is fine. We are back to normal. No one is asking you for money. No one is asking you for your radio station in your garage anymore. Just kill him.
Wow. Tell me, you mentioned to me the other day when we spoke that you're having internet problems. Is that because of where you are, or is it because of the war that you're having?
No. That's because of where we are, because the location is complicated. Probably it's also because of the war, because a lot of people relocated. And, you know, the channels were supposed to serve like 100 people. And at that place right now, we have 10,000 people. So your speed goes down, but mostly that's because of the location.
Right? Understood.
It's complicated. It's mountains and everything, yeah.
Understood. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got one silly question to ask you.
Please go ahead. There is no silly question. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing about food? How are you eating?
We are like families here. Mm-hmm. And there is a breakfast organized by a place where we stay. And at that place, you may have a sandwich or an apple, something like that. So we go to the breakfast there. And after lunch, someone is cooking something at home. It's usually a hot meal, like a soup or comforting food, you know, like meat and potato and carrots in a big bowl. You just bake it or do something with that.
Now,
that's how we eat.
So you're still able to buy meat and vegetables and the things that you need?
Yes. It was pretty scarce on the first days, but right now supply and demand are more or less okay. I mean, you don't have your whole foods supply, please understand. But you have chicken, you have pork most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe they have something else, but that's what we eat. And I'm not much of, you know, ballerina in terms of eating. I eat what I have. So I'm not.
Well, that's good. Now, so at least where you are, people aren't hungry, right?
No, of course not.
Good.
No.
Okay. No. Well, I in addition to getting rid of Putin, is there one thing that every day you say, anything. It could be something tiny. I wish I could have, if I could just have this one thing. Is there something like that?
You are looking for some mundane thing. Am I correct?
Sure. Like, very sure. Simple.
Yeah. Listen, for the first 2 weeks, it was beer.
And now?
I know it does not sound fancy, but realistically, in the evening, because you are so stressed, you would like to have a glass of beer.
Wow.
And yes, just a glass of beer, but there was no beer available, and there was also abolition was placed around all over the country, and you couldn't buy beer even if there were supplies at some shop and you knew where the shop was.
Why?
It was forbidden till. Why? Because it's war. You don't want people to be drunk at war.
Okay. I don't understand, but thank God.
Yes, but I mean, because I'll tell you why. Just imagine, no matter war or no war, people still have birthdays, right?
Right.
And on a birthday, if you cannot buy anything fancy, champagne or something like that, you go and buy a couple of beers for a friend, or three beers for a friend.
Sure.
And then raid alert comes. But you had two beers. And you say, listen, I'll wait. And boom, it hits you. And then a lot of people should take you from this, from underneath where you are, and you are creating so many problems just because you are not sober. Do I make myself clear?
Absolutely.
I mean, you should be sober. You should be sober and alert.
Everyone should be all the time. Those are the little right. things that we don't think about at all. Trust me. No
that's
one.
Good. I know. I understand.
It's just good to know.
Imagine that Hurricane Katrina is like 95% likelihood that it will strike you in an hour. Would it be wise to drink beer or not to drink?
Well, I might put some away for after I got some.
Yes, for after, but not right now.
I know.
You don't know. And just substitute Hurricane Katrina by Russian missiles. Oh, that's extremely unwise to drink beer, right?
Of course. Yes. So are you able to get it now, or that's done until...
Yes. Beer is legal again. Beer and some very light wines.
Right, but no vodka at this point.
No vodka, no whiskey, no.
Right. Okay. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time.
Pleasure was mine.
I know you have quite a lot to deal with and to do. So we think about you all the time. We talk about you all the time on the radio and personally here at home. And
thank you so much. Thank you so much, and you helped us so much, and we are so grateful. You can't believe.
It's my pleasure, and I commit to you, you will get that truck.
Thank you, and I'll commit to you that you will have that sign on the driver's door, Putin, I'm coming after you.
Levine Radio is coming for you.
No problem. Okay. As you say, consider it done.
All right. Thank you, Bogdan. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Henry.
And my best thank to your so family and Roman and everyone at Krena
FM. Of course. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Щена мила України, ні слава, ні воля.
You've been listening to Anne Levine's conversation with Bogdan, the general manager of Krena FM in Ukraine, Ukrainian National Resistance Radio. Thanks for tuning in to this special episode of the Anne Levine Show. There'll be more on Monday.